It's time for JT the Brick.
I plan and I train and I set my mind every single day to play for championships.
LeBron is looking at all this saying, this is not what I signed up for. And guess what? LeBron's got a point.
You got LeBron here now. It's his turn now.
Got folks close to Jeannie Buss imploring her to trade LeBron James.
I'm shocked that I'm even talking about this.
You're the face of the NBA. I think you should be more a part of your team, folks. And right now, we see he doesn't really care.
Last few years, you know, everybody's so accustomed to the losses that I'm just not accustomed to. I would never get comfortable with losing.
You got to be stable. You got to be stable in free agency. You got to do that.
JT the Brick.
They are the bleeping Los Angeles Lakers. You would think that everybody would want to play for the Lakers. It's a childhood dream. Wow, what are they going to do now?
I bleed purple and gold.
I'm sensing that this thing is a circus, and it's imploding around us, and it makes for tremendous radio.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Good to have you back. Hour number two. JT with you for another hour. Courtesy of PT's, the best happy hour in town, and it's in progress starting right now. I go right to the SG Bar. 215, the patio, the 215 of Flamingo. Check out the live music. Check out their private rooms, their food menu. It's my bar. When I get out of here, I swing by the SG Bar, right there at the 215 of Flamingo. Sierra Gold, Sean Patrick's, all the great establishments, and inside the Strat at Boulevard in Maine. We're spending most of the show talking about Kawhi Leonard's game-winning shot in Game 7 yesterday. It was one of the most iconic shots in NBA history. It's the first ever Game 7 buzzer-beater winner in a home Game 7 ever. Michael Jordan did it in 89, 20 years ago in a Game 5 in the first round. So I was blown away by that. I would have lost on Jeopardy if you said, was this the first ever Game 7 buzzer beater? I would have said, no, there had to be another one. There wasn't. We didn't know that. So you look at the history of this league, we just saw history. Here's the TNT version of Kawhi knocking down the biggest shot of his career.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
Nice job by Kevin Harlan on TNT, letting that breathe in the crowd there. That's a huge crowd, big crowd outside. And Toronto is desperate in basketball to win. They'll go on now to take on Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference. I like both teams going in. I think it's Kawhi versus Giannis, and that looks like a lot of fun to me. A lot of people believe that it's Giannis's time. He will be that player. He'll be the next legendary player in this league. I think he's going to win multiple MVPs sooner or later. And then you got Kawhi, who's already won a championship and an MVP in the NBA Finals. So Vegas thinks that Milwaukee is going to win this. Vegas loves Milwaukee, and I think there's probably some value here. Milwaukee opened up a 6.5-point favorite. It remains 6.5. Remember, Milwaukee lost Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Semis to Boston, and it woke them up. So will they be flat in this game? Do you like Toronto here to at least cover? Or did Toronto expend so much energy in winning that game, partying after that game, traveling to Milwaukee, that maybe they'll get blown out in this game? Portland will take on Golden State. C.J. McCollum had a big game. He was the star for Portland. I thought he was exceptional because Damian Lillard was off for most of the game, but he picked him up.
10 seconds of the shot clock, down to 14 of the game. C.J. dribbles, free throw line jumper. Yes, he got it! And the Blazers back in front by 3, 98-95, 11.4 left here in the fourth quarter.
Blazers radio. So Golden State will open up a 8-point favorite over at the Superbook. MGM Mirage has its 7.5 along with William Hill for the Golden State Warriors in Portland. Again, it seems like a lot of points for a Portland team that's deep, that's playing well. There's no Kevin Durant. There's no Boogie Cousins in this game. It looks like Durant will miss at least game one, possibly game two. That changes the series. Remember, Charles Barkley, when Durant went down, said it was over. Houston was going to win game 6 and 7. and Steph Curry put an end to that. I thought Steph Curry was exceptional in the closeout game. He didn't have a good first half, but he ended up really burying big shots to put away the Rockets.
Curry behind the back twice, leans, fades, fires, it's up and good! A three ball for Curry! Amazing!
Yeah, it was amazing. That's Tim Roy on the Warriors Radio Network. After the game, Steve Kerr praised Curry, who did it all when the team needed him to show up.
Well, that's what Steph does. I mean, I actually told his mom and dad after the game, I said, if that game didn't personify Steph Curry, I don't know what did. He's a guy who can make some plays that leave you scratching your head. You know, the fouls, some of the turnovers, not tonight, but sometimes he just makes plays and you kind of look around thinking, you know, what is he doing? But most of the time he makes these incredible plays and he's just fearless.
So does anybody think the Warriors will be beat? Can I make it simpler than that? I don't think I can make it any simpler than that. There are three teams remaining to beat the Warriors. That would be Portland, Toronto, and Milwaukee. Do you believe that there's a team that has a chance? 876-1340. Do you give any team a chance to do it? I do not. I don't give a team a chance. I think the Warriors, as long as Steph Curry doesn't roll an ankle, there could be an injury here. We don't predict injuries on the show, but I think they're done. I think beating Houston was their big battle. To tie in, Bobby, I'm tying everything into Game of Thrones and battles. I think the battle for the Warriors was the Rockets, and they put them away in six. They didn't do it. They didn't have to come from behind in Game 7. They put them away on the road in Game 6. You really don't think Portland can beat the Warriors, do you? I don't see it. Zach Collins, who went to Bishop Gorman, is playing there. Maybe they just get up for it, and it's an emotional series for Portland, and they can keep this thing close and get a bounce or two. I don't see it, and I like Milwaukee over Toronto. I think that Milwaukee will win that series in six games. I hope the Kawhi plays great. I hope we have a classic game. I don't think anything's going to top that Portland-Denver series. That was the best series. And for Philadelphia, the process is over. They put that team together. Remember, I don't believe in the process. They built the team by really cheating. And people say, what do you mean by that? Well, they were losing on purpose the last couple of years. They were losing on purpose. Isn't that cheating? If you go to a Little League game or you go to a pickup or a high school basketball game, if someone was losing on purpose, you'd call that cheating. Well, the Sixers have been cheating for the last 5 years. They lost on purpose to get ping pong balls. It was called the process. And then the process still hasn't got to the NBA Finals. So they are getting what they deserve. Even my Knicks, I don't think my Knicks were losing on purpose. They just suck. They're just terrible. They can't beat anybody. But they weren't consciously losing on purpose the way Philadelphia was. So I think Jimmy Butler's going to leave, and I think that the Sixers are going to have to find a way to turn it up again and get it going. For the Lakers, I wanted to put most of this hour on the Lakers when we booked the show last week. Eddie Johnson's supposed to call in here in a moment. We're waiting on him, but I thought the Laker protest from last week was really interesting. Remember that whining little guy who went out to the statues in the plaza and said this?
My uncle had Magic. My older brother had Kobe. I have LeBron. He's brought me nothing. A change needs to happen right now. Get bus out of here. They're too incompetent for this city, and we don't want it anymore.
That stayed with me all weekend. It really did, because it's important. It's an important moment to teach kids about not protesting. Go protest the war. Go protest civil rights. Go protest your education. Don't protest a team that has LeBron James on the team. And then the Lakers decided to go with Frank Vogel as the head coach, formerly of the Indiana Pacers. He's a decent coach. He's not a bad coach. He's been around for a while. And Jason Kidd is the assistant coach. And that brings us to Eddie Johnson, who joins us over 19,000 points in his career. Great run with Phoenix and the Rockets, and he joins us from SiriusXM NBA Radio. Eddie, let's start off. I just mentioned Frank Vogel is the hire of the Lakers, and what about bringing along Jason Kidd to join him?
Well, you know, it's unique, right, because LeBron wasn't, at least what we know, involved in at least the final decision, which is unique in itself. But, you know, look, they have LeBron at a position where a lot of teams haven't been able to get him. They got him locked up for 3 years. So they feel comfortable in making that decision. But Frank Vogel, you know, when he was with the Indiana Pacers the first go-around a number of years ago, I thought he did an excellent job. I thought that he changed a little bit, in my opinion, toward the analytics, I think too aggressively. And I thought it cost his team a little bit with Roy Hibbert and David West. If you remember, I mean, they were winning a lot of games. They were playing well. Then they kind of changed their system, and it kind of went south after that. Then he goes down to Orlando, didn't have much success. So he gets the third shot, right? Three strikes, you're out in this league. So he gets his third shot with a storied franchise and to me, still the best player in the game. So he's got an opportunity to straighten out, I guess, the negatives that people put on him over the last few stops. And, you know, I think he will. I think he's got Jason Kidd next to him. I think Jason is going to help him a lot. I think Jason's going to be great in that locker room for those young guys. So a good combination.
Eddie, I find it unique, the power structure within the Lakers. Jeannie Buss, her relationship, still a friendly relationship with Phil Jackson when they were dating. The fiancé relationship was unique. Kurt Rambis, Lynn DeRambis, you're familiar. You know these individuals. You're friends with some of them. If you look at the way this organization is now being run, Magic leaves, but still Phil and Rambis seem to have power. How could that be? Is that just Jeannie's loyalty to two former friends or two current friends?
I think it's Jeannie's loyalty. I think she, you know, obviously she doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. And I think that's what probably, you know, pushed Magic up against the wall, whereas he was hired to be the president. You know, look, you hire Magic Johnson, you're not doing him any favors in regards to the contract that you give him. Okay? He's a billionaire. All right? So Magic probably lost money when he decided to go work for the Lakers in that regard. I mean, he's a guy that commands a top dollar when he goes to speak. So it wasn't a money thing for him. It was more so a prestige thing, obviously, a loyalty thing. He obviously, you know, Dr. Jerry Buss treated him like a son. So when all of a sudden Jeannie was listening to other people, and we can see that now, right? Based on what we see now, you know she was listening to other people other than Magic. And when Magic came to her with a decision he made, she probably listened to other people that probably got involved in the decision that he wanted to make. And because of that, it frustrated him. And now I think we're starting to see, JT, why he left, right? We're starting to see that even though he was the president, it was a lot of people that still had her ear, right? He wasn't the final say-so in the organization. And that's Magic Johnson, man. Come on. I mean, we've seen him on the court. We know that he wants it his way, and his way was always good. It always worked. And if it doesn't, he's going to walk. And so now we're seeing it. We're seeing all the different voices and opinions that are within this organization, the Lakers. And, hey, if it works out for them, fine. But, you know, right now it just doesn't look good in that regard.
Eddie Johnson is our guest. Eddie, let's move to the Celtics. Do you sense that the fan base is done, the organization's done with Kyrie Irving? And it's tough to be critical of the Celtics. When Danny Ainge had a second heart attack, he wasn't right. The organization weighed heavy on that. Thank God he's still here. And it just seems with Brad Stevens in this roster, not that they're going to have to break it down and completely rebuild it, but if Kyrie's not there long term and Gordon Hayward's not the player they initially signed coming off the injury, what do the Celtics do to win a championship? Wasn't that the plan over the last 3 or 4 years, is that they would win a championship by now?
I think the Celtics are a prime example of how difficult it is to actually win a championship, right? Because so many things have to fall correct for you. And everyone thought over the last 5 or 6 years that Danny Ainge was doing all the correct things, right? Piling up draft picks. He's drafting young players. He was making great choices. Philly could have easily drafted Tatum. The Lakers could have easily drafted Tatum. They didn't. The Celtics got him. So he's made tremendous choices in compiling talent and hoarding up draft picks. He gets Brad Stevens, obviously, has done a tremendous job as a coach. So everything looked good. He gets Kyrie in a trade, and everything seems Gordon Hayward, he signs him. So everything seems to be on the right track. But the bottom line is, and here's why I put it, and I said this last year before the season started, and people jumped on me when I said it, JT. I said this would be the toughest year that Brad Stevens would have to be a coach, because the bottom line is they got too much of everything. They had too much of everything. They got guys that feel like they can play, and young guys. Really? You don't think them young guys don't want to get paid, like Kyrie's getting ready to get paid? I mean, you're going to have that combustion right there with minutes. You don't think that they probably looking at Gordon Hayward and saying he's not ready to play, but yet you're playing him. You're starting to start the season. You don't think that starts combustion? I mean, you look at the free agents on that team. Marcus Morris Sr. is one who probably plays as consistent as anybody all year, and he's trying to prove himself. It was just too much combustion because they had too much of the same thing. And, yeah, if it all worked, they moved the ball, they did what Brad Stevens wanted, it could have succeeded. But this isn't college. It's not the Hoosiers, man. You know, he doesn't have that kind of control at this level. I mean, this level, Rozier wants to get paid. Tatum wants to get paid. He wants to be an all-star. Jaylen Brown wants to be recognized that he's more important on that team too. So now you got that combustion, and it just doesn't work. It hits a wall. And so people want to blame Kyrie. No. The great Jerry Krause used to say, and I agree with him, and I disagree with Michael on this, championships are won by what? The organization, top to bottom. And I think Danny Ainge rolled the dice when he compiled all those talented players, and they struggled. They struggled with adhering to what Brad Stevens wants. And then Brad Stevens has struggled in the motivational part, in trying to get these guys to acquiesce and buy into the system, don't worry about their individual stats, believing that they're going to get paid, and then it falls to Kyrie. The guy that's the leader, the guy that probably should keep everything tight in the locker room, and he didn't. So you get three people, three individuals, I think, that missed out right there, but Kyrie's going to get most of the blame because he's the guy out there on the court performing.
Eddie Johnson, as we wrap it up, your former team, the Rockets, I'm never that hard on Harden because he's losing to a dynasty and what could be one of the great dynasties of all time in the Warriors. So I'm not as critical as I would be if he was losing to an inferior team because he played poorly in games and there was series that he was supposed to win. What's a fair criticism for James Harden coming off another loss in the postseason to the Warriors?
You know, it's funny you say that, and I just like to say this real quickly, and people hate for me to always bring it up. And if people think that way, right, and it's not wrong for you to think that way and not being too hard on Harden, then recognize in 2016 that LeBron did something that was just unworldly. Okay?
Yeah.
See, that's the way I look at it. Then recognize what he did in 2016 coming back from 3-1, down 3-1, and what he did. Because you're right. This team is ridiculous. And we saw Splash Brothers the other day, true to form. Their record is unbelievable without Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was a luxury for their team, and he's a great luxury because arguably he's the best player in the game. But really, those two can get it done by themselves, and they proved it. Here's what I have a problem with Harden, though. You were at home, man. You were at home. All year long, what did we hear, JT? Oh, he might be the greatest offensive player ever. Really? Where are you, man? Gary. People say, oh, well, he had a great game tonight. No, he didn't. Did they lose? Now all of a sudden, great players can get off because they had a great offensive game and they still lost? No, it doesn't work that way. You know, and the funny part is, yeah, I'm kind of like, obviously, I'm partial to LeBron, right? If LeBron had did what James Harden did the other day, what would the headlines be right now?
Oh,
but,
I get
but
it.
Harden wants to be, though, in that stratosphere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie wants to be in that stratosphere. Well, if you want to be in that stratosphere with that guy set, you should take the criticism for losing, especially at home. Chris Paul should take the criticism for losing. Although he played well, it's not enough because you're supposed to be judged on wins. And so they need to take the criticism because they should have beaten them. They came out lackadaisical early on. They adhered to the analytical system, I think, overboard at times. And it got them in trouble. It got them in trouble. And some things have to change within their framework and how they think because I had them beating the Golden State Warriors two times. I did. Mm-hmm. Based on what the Warriors are presented with right now, five straight times trying to get to the finals, they're a little fatigued. Curry's hand is beat up. They don't have KD. They lose Boogie Cousins. They got an old bench. Really? You can't let them get away with that. I think it was an embarrassment that they lost at home. And they should be criticized for it.
Thank you, Eddie. You're the best. Love having you on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, JT. Appreciate it.
Always appreciate you, Eddie. Eddie Johnson, what a great player he was. So as we talk about the Lakers and the drama behind this team going forward, this is an ongoing conversation because we are now in free agency. Can't tamper with the players who are playing. But a guy like Jimmy Butler today had his post-game press conference in Philly. He wants to leave it open. He didn't want to take a shot and say he's leaving. But if you're LeBron James, you got to assume that Jimmy Butler's available and you got to start working him. You got to get going. And the Lakers, unless they work really hard, and for all you Laker fans here in the Valley, I've been on an hour and 21 minutes, and no one has an opinion on the Lakers and what to do. I mean, what do you do? It almost feels like they want them to fold shop? I mean, just to be non-competitive. Because the Lakers are a team that doesn't have to be competitive, and they sell out at Staples Center. They don't have to go to the playoffs. Sold out. All the tickets are gone for next year. They'll put all the dates up. They'll put them on the website. Everybody will buy them all. The suites, everything. Bars will be packed inside. They'll sell all the beer and food you want. And they don't even have to make the playoffs because it's Los Angeles. You got 18, 19 million Laker fans there. They all want to go to one game. They all want to go. So all the tickets are going to be sold. They don't have to win. Same with my Knicks. Knicks in New York at Madison Square Garden. All the tickets are sold. They're all gone. And they stink. And people continue to go back and watch it. Because what else are you supposed to do in New York and L.A.? What else? You got to do something. You can't go to the beach every day. You can't go to Broadway and watch a play every day in New York. You want to go to these games. And it's expensive. Wow. Man, it's expensive to lose in sports. You don't make the playoffs. You don't win in the postseason. You don't play deep into the playoffs. A lot of teams continue to lose. And the Lakers are a disturbing trend right now of losing. Dating back to the end of the Kobe Bryant reign to the beginning of the LeBron James era. Wow, who thought that was coming? Not many Laker fans that I talk to. When we come back, we'll get into Kawhi Leonard again and the impact of that shot and what it meant. And then my partner, Tom Looney, we got a brand new podcast coming up. We'll tell you about that when he joins us. Looney will join us in about 15 or 20 minutes when he gets out of the gym. He wanted to call in on the Lakers because he listens to the show online like many at lvsportsnetwork.com as we're fueled by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson.
He's a terrific play. Oh my goodness, Kawhi Leonard put Joel Embiid on another poster. He raised up and crowned him. Oh, man, Kawhi Leonard shocking the house tonight.
Oh, I'm happy Bobby decided to play some Pantera coming out of this one because Saturday night I went to the Vinnie Paul tribute, the drummer from Pantera, the late drummer of Hell Yeah. That concert was at the House of Blues inside Mandalay Bay. And I met Vinny a number of times through my friend Johnny Mack, and he's a huge sports fan. Vinny was. I'm having a difficult time reminding it and saying Vinny in the past. Vinny was an iconic sports fan. Big Dallas Stars fan. Whenever the Dallas Stars score a goal, you hear his music inside the arena in Dallas. He was such a passionate fan. And then he slid over to the Golden Knights for obvious reasons, and they were developing into his team. And I think, I'm not going to say he would have cut the cord with Dallas. His roots there were huge, but saw him with the Golden Knight jersey. He was there up top with the siren, saw him at games. And he passed away. They had that tribute concert and had a good time because it was a celebration of life. Johnny Katz was there from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Dennis Huff from across the hall, the iconic rock DJ here in our building, was the MC of the event. We saw a lot of people there. So with a heavy heart, Friday night I went and saw the Hollywood Vampires. Saturday night I went to see the Vinnie Paul tribute. My ears are still ringing. And the big thing I have to say is I did a radio show Sunday on Sirius XM, and I couldn't hear my ears in the morning. So I decided, as I go to concerts going forward, there will be some type of earplug going in because that Vinnie Paul tribute was a bit over the top, to say the least, in regards to volume and where I was. All right, if you're joining us late, last hour we talked about Kawhi Leonard and that unbelievable game-winning shot. And what blew me away, before we play you the sound bites, and we have multiple, it was the first Game 7 buzzer beater in NBA history. Do you believe that? We're talking about Kawhi Leonard made the first Game 7 buzzer beater in NBA history. Jordan did it over Craig Elo in a 5 game, which became that iconic shot, maybe the most iconic shot in Jordan's career. So for Kawhi Leonard to have that, and I was watching the game with my sons and my father-in-law. When they said that after the game, I said, how could that be? Kobe's won five titles, five. He's never hit a game winner in game seven, no. Then you go to Bird, you go to Magic, Dr. J, go to the legendary Celtics, right, of Bob Cousy and Havlicek. No one did that. So here's how it sounded again as Kawhi hits arguably one of the most iconic shots of all time, and especially the biggest bucket in Raptors history.
Raptors, here we go. They get it to Leonard. Drives right. Down to the baseline. Fall away for the win. Got it! Kawhi Leonard's shot went up in the air. It hit the rim. It bounced on the rim before going through the bucket. Toronto wins 92-90. It's on to Milwaukee and the Eastern Conference Final.
Now, that's Raptors Radio. So I'm fascinated on this topic because I have an affinity for San Antonio. I watched Kawhi win his championship in San Antonio. I was there for that. And I thought that he was going to be another cornerstone in the history of the Spurs organization. Behind David Robinson, Duncan, Ginobili, Parker, they had the guy. And remember, he didn't want to stay. For whatever that reason was, which I think we're going to peel that back here over the next couple of weeks, nationally, globally, why did Kawhi Leonard want to leave San Antonio? No one ever got a good answer because he's so private about it. I want you to listen to the TNT version on the television side. Tell me how good this is.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
Kevin Harlan on the call, and Greg Anthony. Hey, how's everybody feel about that in Vegas? Greg Anthony on the call. Kevin Harlan, friend of the show. He does a lot of Raider games, and I get a chance to see him a few times a year. That was great that he called, is this the dagger? So that goes down humbly after the game. Kawhi Leonard, just a real quiet guy. I don't think he ever expected to have an interview like this and have a talk about a game-winning shot.
I knew it was game seven, and I didn't want to leave no shots. In my mind, I just wanted to go out and leave it all on the floor. This could have been my last game for the season, and you know, I would have had to wait four months to put another shot up in a game. So I was gonna leave it all out on the floor tonight and not worry about makes or misses and still just, you know, try to will us to a win or just get to my spots.
So he's a very humble guy, very quiet guy, and we have a problem with that in society. We have egos, ego-driven guys. Antonio Brown, the newest one with the Raiders, always on Instagram, always talking. We have other guys like LeBron, Lightning Rod, athletes in other sports, Bryce Harper when he strikes out, upset. Everybody's a lightning rod. We judge everybody by what they accomplish and how they react to their accomplishments. Kawhi Leonard could be the most humble guy that we've ever seen in this league. He's a two-way player. He plays offense and defense. Now he's becoming an iconic scorer. I mean, you think about this. 41 points and only the second buzzer beater in a winner-take-all game in the postseason. We mentioned Michael Jordan. The Cavaliers in the first round of the 1989 Eastern Conference playoffs. Kawhi took 39 shot attempts. That's second only to Elgin Baylor's 40 in the 1962 NBA Game 7 playoff game. So we got to go back to 1962, and then we got to go back to 1989 with Jordan in doing that. So that's what I do for a living. I cover history and iconic moments, and I like to put them in perspective. That shot will go down in NBA history, and they will talk about it 100 years from now because that's how long it is between great moments like this. You would think that you saw that 4 or 5 years ago. You didn't. You would think that someone did it before Jordan or after Jordan. Nope. We were wrong. It took Kawhi Leonard to do something Jordan-esque. Now the question becomes, will he stay in Toronto? I said this about LeBron. If Kawhi lost that game, if that didn't go in, they go to overtime and lose. Now LeBron has to go recruit Kawhi Leonard because we know that Kawhi Leonard wants to get back to L.A., or at least we think he does. He played. He grew up in Riverside, California. He went to San Diego State. He just built a mansion in Rancho Santa Fe, which is a suburb of San Diego next to Del Mar, a mansion. So he's going to live the remainder of his life in Southern California. So that's tough to play for Toronto when you want to live in Rancho Santa Fe and be that close to the beach and the ocean and all of that. Toronto is a cosmopolitan city. It's one of the great global cities, and they leave their players alone because basketball is not the number one sport. It's number three. It's obviously hockey. Then it's baseball, where the Jays have won championships, and they love baseball there in Canada. So we're talking about the third biggest sport there with a guy in Kawhi Leonard who could walk down the street in Toronto if he throws a baseball cap on and no one would know who he was. And he could have the freedom to be there and travel internationally. So I'm fascinated by this because I think LeBron James needs him in L.A. And if LeBron can't get him in L.A. and he ends up going to the Clippers, would that officially be rock bottom for all of us with the Lakers? Because we're looking for rock bottom. Rock bottom is when something sinks and it continues to sink and then it hits the bottom of the seafloor. Rock bottom. Well, for the Lakers, hiring Frank Vogel, Magic quitting, LeBron's injury, they don't make the playoffs. All the problems that they've had, Kobe's last couple of years, a disaster in regards to them even being competitive. But if Kawhi Leonard tells LeBron, I'm not coming to your Lakers, I'm going to stay in the building and play for the JV minor league team, the Clippers, then you really got to shake your head and go, something's going on here. If LeBron James can't get Kawhi to come, so Kawhi ends up winning the game, and I say to myself, well, now LeBron's got to go on Instagram or Twitter, and he's got to go start recruiting Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler disappeared for a portion of that game, but he hit the layup that tied the game and should have forced overtime if Kawhi missed it. Jimmy Butler's a hell of a player. And if LeBron doesn't get Anthony Davis and he doesn't get Kevin Durant and he doesn't get Klay Thompson, which we've been talking about on this broadcast, he's got to get Jimmy Butler. Because Jimmy Butler can do something that LeBron loves. Two things. A, he can get his own shot. And then B, if LeBron gets him the basketball, he can knock down shots. LeBron doesn't have any shooters on the Lakers. He doesn't have a guy he can trust like Kawhi Leonard or Jimmy Butler. So I thought that was a significant game last night. So we move on to the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference Finals. In the Eastern Conference, Golden State opens up an 8-point favorite against Portland without Kevin Durant, who will miss game one. 8 points? Now, you got to be saying that they got a little bit of added rest over Portland. Portland expended a lot of energy to go into Denver and win that game. That was a great game, as we talked about earlier. So I don't know how you like that game. The total is 218.5 at Jay Cornegay's Westgate at the Superbook. I like that game to go over. I think that Portland can keep it close on emotions alone, but some people just think the Warriors are going to smash them. But how about this? Milwaukee's a 6.5-point favorite as we speak against Kawhi in Toronto. 6.5? For Giannis, they've been rested for a while. And remember, Milwaukee lost to Boston in game one at home. Remember? And everyone was like, oh, Boston, they're going to win the series. And then Milwaukee just hammered them and eliminated them. You would think that Milwaukee would be really rested and ready for this game, and they'd want to take care of business at home. So this was a great weekend in the NBA. I think the NBA should be thrilled about the fact that Portland and Denver went to Game 7. We had a buzzer-beater Game 7, an iconic moment for Toronto, an international, global city. The NBA likes that. And now we get great matchups. The only thing that I said before, I'll say it again, is that the Warriors have already won the NBA title. Beating Houston, I believe, puts them there with another ring, where the dynasty will be 4 in 5 years. And if I'm wrong, you know where to find me. The only team I believe that can give the Warriors a fight and even take them to 6 games and will lose is Milwaukee. Toronto's not good enough. Portland's not good enough. But, hey, I've been wrong in the past. When we come back, we'll get into some of the other big moments over the weekend. Hey, a lot of Raider news coming up this week as the rookies are back in the building with the vets. There's going to be some great sound coming up this week, some great Gruden sound. We're supposed to get a player on or a coach. I'll tell you about that later in the week. JT the Brick, numbers 876-1340. Find me on Twitter at JT the Brick, on Facebook at JT the Brick. All brought to you by Golden Entertainment.
Well, folks, time to call tonight. Drink up. The world's about to end.
Time now for the nightcap.
Well, then. Last orders, please.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So till next time.
Good night, everybody.
With the look ahead to tonight's action, here's JT the Brick.
My uncle had Magic. My older brother had Kobe. I have LeBron. He's brought me nothing. A change needs to happen right now. Get Bus out of here. They're too incompetent for this city, and we don't want it anymore.
I can't get enough of that sound from the Laker protest. The kid from the Laker protest last week. I didn't get a chance to talk to my long-term radio companion over 14 years. We have new podcast up. He's got one on Harold Letterman, who just passed away, the great boxing judge who passed away, and Looney put up an old interview that he did with him at jtandlooney.com. And Tom Looney joins us every 2 weeks, and he's up right now. Looney, thanks for coming on. How did you survive the Laker protest?
Well, it's just like, remember when I told you, when we were on the air all those years, I would say, there's no such thing as a PETA protest. It's two guys with a fax machine somewhere. And same thing here. It got a lot of hype, and then a couple of kids skipped a class. Couple of high school kids and went down and whined about how LeBron didn't bring him a championship in 15 minutes, and then they went back to class for seventh period. So it didn't end up being what they thought it was. But what you just said, something that shocked me, and I'm worried about your safety. Did you just take a shot at Scott Skiles?
Yes, I did. I should know. Does he have like 11 kids?
Yeah, you've got to be careful. He makes Evander Holyfield look like a virgin. Yeah, he has got his boys are getting older. He's got one in every state. You better be careful, young man.
Getting back to the kids, I was a little hard on them. I called them whiners, and I don't want to sound like get off my lawn guy and all that, but it's tough to protest a sports team when they're not doing well. We've talked over the years about real men who protested, like Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar,
right,
for real reasons. Is there ever a circumstance where you should protest your sports team?
Sports team? No, I don't. Yes, if there are young men dying in wars, we used to protest. We've been in Afghanistan and Iraq since early 2000s. No one says a word. It's terrible. But when it comes to sports team, oh come on! And you can't compare any of those civil rights leaders you talked about to those 13-year-olds with braces at Staples Center saying stupid 13-year-old things into a microphone.
What about Frank Vogel and what happens here? Because you go to Laker games and you see Genie and you read Genie's book. And now we talked earlier with Eddie Johnson, and it comes to the point where she might be too loyal. Why am I hearing the name Kurt Rambis and Linda Rambis? I thought when Phil and Genie didn't get married and walk down the aisle that they'd break up. Like most adults, when they break up, they don't talk again. And now I'm hearing Phil Jackson still has control and a big voice in the room with the Lakers.
Well, this is Hollywood, JT. There's no fine line between love and Hollywood. We are the world. We are the children. Even when we break up, we're good breaker-uppers. We hold hands, and we still go to parties together. And so that's the way Hollywood works. It's interesting. You mentioned this, and it sounds like I'm going to lose my man card, that I read the Jeannie Buss book, Laker Girl. But it was fascinating because her father grew up in a house like in North Dakota with no heat, and they had to all sleep in the kitchen and use the oven for heat. So it's a great story about how Dr. Buss, an aerospace engineer, invested in some real estate and ended up with the Lakers. And when she was young, he was daddy's girl, and he made her general manager of the Los Angeles Strings, which was a tennis team that played in Inglewood. And she hired Linda Rambis, who had a different last name at the time, and they've been best friends since they ran a sports team when they were probably 19 or 20. She's been running sports teams for 30 years, and she really has. I think when people hear Linda Rambis, because it sounds like it's Kurt's wife, but she has been in sports a lot longer than Kurt as a manager and as a muckety-muck. So there's a little sexism that goes on with it. I just know this from reading that book. They've been not only best friends for a long time, and Jeannie fixed up Linda Rambis with Kurt over the years. But the only thing that worries about me is Kurt Rambis is a good person, but not a good basketball coach. We know that. Awful, awful. If you remember, the L.A. Lakers, the year before they won that championship with Phil Jackson in 2000, 2001, had an even better roster. And Kurt Rambis, one day when he was coaching that team, they threw a wet paper bag over him, and he couldn't coach out of it. So he shouldn't be anywhere near any Algonquin Roundtable hiring coaches.
My longtime happy chatter companion on the radio, the great Tom Looney at Looney on Fox, joins me. This, to me, becomes LeBron's issue now. That LeBron, if you go back in the hot tub time machine, which we like to do, and LeBron's thinking about going to the Lakers on a four-year deal, if he could start up the machine and go back in time, I don't think there's a way he would do it because he didn't think it would play out this way with Magic quitting, Frank Vogel as his coach, Ty Lue backing out of a deal because he didn't like the terms of all that. Plus, he doesn't like the team around him. He tried to trade half the team to go get Anthony Davis. Isn't this on LeBron James going forward to get on that private jet with Genie and fly all around the country and sit down and talk to free agents about building a super team again, the way the Warriors did with the Hampton Fives when they went out to Southampton and sat down with Durant and ended up building a dynasty?
Oh, and believe me, LeBron is doing that. He's going to continue to do that. No, I think LeBron would do it over. This is what he wants to do with his life. He's talented. People can do what they do, where they want to do it. And this is where he wants to do it. He's making his barbershop TV shows. He's looking to the next part of his life. These are his Washington Wizards years. You may make an analogy. And, look, they were the best team in the NBA when he got hurt on Christmas Day. And they were just terrific. And then he tore. We're forgetting it's an injury. It's not a big disaster like people are saying it was. LeBron James was hurt and didn't play on this team. And he probably shouldn't have played the rest of the year when he tore his groin on that Christmas Day when they won anyway without him. They were terrific that day, and they were terrific as a team up until that day for the first 6 weeks of the season. They're going to be – LeBron had a better team around him with the Lakers than he did when he had Boobie Gibson and Zildrinas Algauskas in Cleveland going to the finals. It was just the fact that he was hurt. As you can tell, I'm the number one apologist for the Los Angeles Lakers of the United States of America, and I'm going to hold on to that title.
Also a Kobe apologist on top of that, too, a Lakers and a Kobe apologist.
Oh, my God, that's how I cut my teeth.
Tom Looney, as we wrap it up, finally, we're all about loyalty. We've been friends a long time. We're loyal to each other. Do you think that Jason Kidd will be loyal to Frank Vogel, or is Jason Kidd today sitting down having a steak at the Palm across the street, planning his way to go up and take the job away from Vogel, who's technically his boss?
Yeah, and that's a big conspiracy theory going on, and I'd like to add to it. I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy. I believe in small ones, not big ones, because in the information age, once someone talks, it just becomes news. But Jason, I think they would have just hired Jason Kidd, except then with the Me Too movement, people would have dug up the old headlines about that unfortunate time that he threw his wife down the stairs. So that's the reason why he's not the head coach right now. So they're easing him in. They're getting us, they're massaging us and getting used to, so we can get used to Jason Kidd, who will eventually be the coach of the Lakers. But the only reason he's not the head coach right now is because of the Me Too movement.
Beautiful. Have a great day. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, my friend. Tom Looney. He knows that team, and clearly he's excited about the future of the Lakers, but no one knows what's going to happen with Frank Vogel and Jason Kidd. This was something that they didn't plan. It's amazing to me that a global corporation worth billions of dollars has no plan. How is that possible? I wake up every day and I live out of a planner. I can't get through my morning without looking at my planner. This is what I got to do today. And this is a global organization that a month ago had Magic Johnson quit on them. No plan, no idea what they're doing. A month ago, they didn't have Frank Vogel lined up. That was all because Ty Lue was going to be the next coach. We all knew that Ty Lue was in town for the fight. He was in town for the Canelo fight. He was supposed to fly back with LeBron, have a press conference. There you go. Off to the races to go recruit players, and that is not the case. One of the big stories that broke during the show today, and we have to bring it up because Bob Kraft, the judge in the Bob Kraft Orchids of Asia Day Spa story, which is a big one, has suppressed the video in the Kraft alleged prostitution solicitation case. West Palm Beach, Florida. Prosecutors now cannot use the video allegedly showing Patriots owner Robert Kraft engaging in that massage parlor sex act. So this could crumble the whole case, and Robert Kraft could walk And that's it. So, again, we've been covering this story nonstop when it broke. And he's still going to have this embarrassment. Everybody knows that Robert Kraft was in there. The dates, the times, is the video. But if the video is suppressed, reports now in this 10-page ruling by the judge in the case, he wrote that the Jupiter police detectives and the judge who issued the search warrant allowing the secret installation of cameras at the day spa in Jupiter did not do enough to minimize the invasion of privacy of other customers, because some were getting legal massages there. So the thing that's going to save Kraft and save this for your barbecue this weekend is that they went in there and they installed these cameras to catch people in illegal acts of prostitution. Problem is, there were people in there actually getting real massages that weren't looking for a sexual favor, and they went in there to get their neck worked on or their back, and they were going into those private massages under video surveillance. So I always knew that Kraft's attorneys were big time. They're expected to file a motion tomorrow to dismiss the case based on lack of evidence, because the video evidence is now suppressed and you can't use it. So what's the evidence there? There's no more evidence. So this is a classic case of a billionaire, a multimillionaire, waiting it out, having their attorneys do everything they could legally. He's going to walk. And most people believe he deserves to walk. He went in there as a 70-plus-year-old man to do something that we all know what he wanted to do. But he went there under surveillance, and he wasn't aware of the surveillance. Which the lesson, as I've been talking about this on the radio for the last couple of months, is that would this help out everybody in Vegas going forward as they are driving down Twain or Spring Mountain and they see 100 of these? Yes, Robert Kraft helped every young man in town now who's thinking about pulling in, and he's going to pull in for the same service that Robert Kraft needed. But when he goes in, he's going to say, excuse me, I'm here. I want to check your room and make sure there's no video surveillance. And as long as there's not a cop in the room or a cop in the lobby, this act will continue on here in beautiful Las Vegas, where we all live and my kids go to school. There you go. So good old Robert Kraft going to walk on this one, most likely. And I think most people are happy for him. And then he'll get fast forwarded to the Hall of Fame and people will forget and move on. Bobby, great job today getting these guests. Eddie Johnson, Looney, who joined us. Albert Hall from the NBA Summer League was fantastic in the first hour. And Chris Doole on Kawhi Leonard. All brought to you by Golden Entertainment, the proud owners of all those PTs, 60-plus in the Valley, where a happy hour is waiting for you right now. Great food, great beverage deals, half off from 5 to 7 and midnight to 2. We'll see you back here tomorrow.